This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. It's been another packed week in Washington, and we'll talk with Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio in our next segment about President Trump's speech before a joint session of Congress. And a little later in the show, Elizabeth Johnston, who runs a popular blog called The Activist Mommy, joins Tony to discuss the events surrounding Facebook banning her twice and their later apology. But first, you may know that this past Tuesday, Target Corporation shares were suffering their biggest price drop ever in active trading. While some wonder if the discount retail giant is struggling to cope with the rapidly changing behavior of consumers, others suspect the successful hashtag Boycott Target initiative is having a bigger effect. Last year, the American Family Association launched a boycott against the big box chain, encouraging shoppers to protest the retailer's dangerous restroom and fitting room policy. American Family Association President Tim Wildman joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss the boycott on Wednesday.
Tim, welcome.
Hey, good to be with you, Anthony.
I was thinking it was your brother there for a minute.
No, I got a brother, but his name's Mark.
All right, well, that's good enough.
But, hey, you know.
Well, let's talk about
Tim is here.
All right, well, good. I'll take Tim. I'll take Tom tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's talk about the impact of, I mean, look, everything else is going up. The stock market hitting a record today, actually, hitting a new record. Everything is going up. Everything is blooming roses, coming up roses, with the exception of Target.
Yeah, I know. So what does that tell you? Just kind of what you said earlier. You know, let me remind people who don't know, or just to refresh everyone's memory, it was April of last year, middle of April of last year, that Target announced, unprovoked, to the world, that they thought, we think it's a great idea in our stores to let men into women's restrooms and changing areas, and we want the world to know about it. We're Target.
Yeah, and they made themselves a target for the wrath of consumers.
What they were trying to do, Tony, you remember North Carolina was in the news at the time, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Because of their situation there, and the North Carolina legislature and governor there wanting to protect the women and children in their bathrooms and changing areas that the state owned and operated. Well, Target thought it would be cool to pile on North Carolina. You know, join Bruce Springsteen and pile on North Carolina. And they thought, Target, that a lot of other Fortune 500 companies would fall in line behind them after they took the lead. And boy, were they wrong.
That effort stalled.
Oh, it stalled immediately. We announced a boycott of Target like a day after that happened. And within 1 week, there were a million people that signed that pledge. Now, That's a record as far as we could tell. We've, you know, done some research on swiftness of people signing boycott pledges, and that took a week to get to a million. Now we're at 1.4, almost 1.5 million now, so it slowed down after that, but went to a million in a week. That's families, quite frankly, Tony. That's not just individuals. That represents families who said, I'm not going to Target anymore as long as they have this dangerous policy. And that only reflects people who are, you know, a lot of people won't sign boycott pledges or won't sign anything on the internet. Anyway, this has been devastating to Target. There's no question about it. I don't quite frankly see how their CEO can survive much longer.
Well, what's interesting here, Tim, is that the law in North Carolina you made reference to, which, you know, the kind of – it was Charlotte. Charlotte took the first step, and then the state responded to say, no, you can't force that on private entities. And then, of course, Obama and his administration jumped onto the Department of Justice. But the law in North Carolina, as the proposed law in Texas, SB 6, which Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has introduced – allows private companies like this to adopt such a policy. They can do it.
Right. Yeah.
But here's why they're not doing it. It's because it's not good for business.
Right.
And so they want the cover of saying, well, no, we didn't choose to do this. The government made us do it. When in reality, look, people don't want this. The polling overwhelmingly, 66% to 70%, depending on how you ask the question, people do not want these types of policies. I think you bring up a great question. And that is, how long can the CEO of Target hold his position? I mean, he's running out of excuses to explain why the Target stock continues to decline, why everything else is going up.
No, you're exactly right. Target thought this would be cool, and they're a left-wing company. They're based out of Minneapolis. We went there and met with them after we got a million people to sign the boycott pledge.
Did you use the restroom while you're there?
Went to the men's room.
Oh, did they have a men's room there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they got a men's room and ladies' room, like they do everywhere in the world and have since the dawn of civilization. Everybody knows this. But it's crazy PC run amok, and it's cost them their stock since the boycott started is down 30%.
Right.
I mean.
Well, they've lost, I think it's, I don't remember the latest number.
Yeah.
I'm looking for my notes here, but I mean, it is in the billions that they've lost in value.
$15 billion.
Yeah, $15 billion that they have lost.
The only reason he hasn't been fired, the fellow's name, I should know, it's Brian something or another.
Brian Cornell.
The only reason Brian hadn't been fired is because they're trying to save face.
Well, but this is not the first time. You remember, you've been involved. American Family Association has led other boycotts in I remember JCPenney took a turn left, and their sales declined, and they made a correction. They jettisoned the CEO, and they brought in somebody new to try to correct it.
Yeah, exactly. These companies, you know, they need to stay away from this. If I were a company, just sell your product, okay? Just whatever it is, just sell your product. You don't have to get involved in politics and making social statements. You really don't. I don't think left or right. You don't have to get into that. Just be neutral.
Well, and here folks need to understand what's driving a lot of this is that a number of years ago, a lot of these Fortune 500 companies adopted what they call these affinity groups. These are special interest groups. They're almost like in Congress has different caucuses. They have in businesses, they have the LGBT affinity group. They've got every special kind of interest, with the exception, most do not have conservative or Christian religious affinity groups because they're quote unquote supposed to be the majority. And so these groups put the squeeze on the executives and you know this because you've worked with Procter & Gamble and Walmart. We've all met with them and talked with them. And this is what they do. What's happened is they are now, this is basically the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
And so the tail has thrown the dog into the street and he just got run over.
But
that's what happened.
Exactly, Tony. But what's happened good here is that you're talking about all these other companies saw what happened to Target. And they're saying, we're not getting involved in that one. We're staying away from that one. So The lesson has been learned out there. I think most of corporate America on this issue.
On this confused bathroom policy. However, I think they should take note that this is a new era.
Right.
You know, this is, you know, in post Donald Trump's election, where Donald Trump took on the media and the elite, and he showed that you can stand up to them and they will stand down. Because they are the minority, not the majority. I think this is going to embolden more people to say, hey, wait a minute. This defies common sense. We're not going down this path. We're not going to do it. And they're going to, like in this case, they're going to vote with their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think corporations need to take the advice you gave just a few minutes ago. If you make widgets and you sell widgets, make widgets and sell widgets.
Right.
Leave the public policy to the people. Don't get involved in that.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think Target's learning the hard way. And I don't know what they're going to do to recover. I'm sure there's panic on their board of directors and among their employees because this is April. Now we're coming up on 6 weeks or so from the anniversary, and they've just done a nosedive with no sign of coming back.
So have you heard anything from the Target Corporation, Tim? Do you expect them to make any changes, or you think they're just going to ride this thing all the way into the ground?
I expect them to. This is just me talking, speculative, without.
I thought it was you talking. Is that your brother Tom?
Well, not me talking. This is me talking without any insider information.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I got you.
We don't know anybody at Target. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody that knows anybody at Target. I'm just saying. I think the CEO will have to go pretty soon because and that whatever they'll never admit to the boycott. I doubt it unless they want to get 1.5 million families to come back to their stores, which would probably be a good idea, you know, to start recovery is to reach back out to people and say, hey, we were wrong on this bathroom policy and changing area policy. We're going to reinstitute male, female again. Please come back to our stores. I think that's the only way they recover.
Well, I hope folks will continue to stand with you, and I want to applaud you, Tim, and all of the team there at the American Family Association, AFR. Great team. Well done. Well done. All right. And tell Tom I said hello, will you?
I'm signing off for Tom right now. I'm going to go talk to Tim.
Hey, thanks for being with us, Tim. Great, good to talk to you.
You can find more about the American Family Association, Tim Wildman, and the hashtag Boycott Target campaign when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com, and click on the donate button. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at President Trump's speech before a joint session of Congress after this break.
Marriages everywhere are in crisis. The divorce rate is sky high. What can turn things around? The key lies in what God has bestowed on mankind, incarnational attachment. This in turn leads to the transforming power of being emotionally present in marriage. In a profound lecture by Dr. Jesse Gill, discover more about embracing God's design for attachment for marriage and our Christian faith in ways that bring transformation and growth. Visit frc.org/events to view this lecture and many more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan joined FRC's Tony Perkins to talk about President Trump's speech before the joint session of Congress. Representative Jordan is a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus, as well as serving on the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins to get us started.
Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony. How you doing? It was a good speech last night, wasn't it?
It was. You know, I would say the last time I was in the House chamber about a year ago was when the Prime Minister of Israel spoke to a joint session of Congress. So, I mean, the benchmark was pretty high. I mean, I would have to say for me was probably one of the best speeches I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Of course, we were starved for leadership at that point because you know what we had was not. Yeah. Much in comparison, I sat almost in the very same seat as I watched last night, and I thought we once again have a leader in America at the helm, and that was to me was encouraging.
Yeah, but I agree, and I thought the tone he set right from the start, which was such a sharp contrast from President Obama, when he said America's ready to lead, and think about that statement and the confidence you feel now in our country versus President Obama, who went on the so-called apology tour and then the dealings that the President Obama had with Iran and the terrible agreement there and then the treatment he gave Israel. Just that statement, just like America's ready to lead, just conveys a whole different just sense and feeling and framework and context as we move forward. I thought that really just set such a different tone. In such a positive tone I just thought it was a very good speech.
Well, and we heard some things last night that I believe, and as best as I can tell, and my team has tracked it down, the first time we've heard certain things from a president of the United States, for instance, his support of homeschooling. He said, I am calling upon members of both parties to pass an education bill that funds school choice for disadvantaged youth, including millions of African Americans and Latino children. These families should be free to choose the public, private, charter, magnet, religious, or homeschool that is right for them. And then it was a very interesting moment, Jim, when the president then went on to point to one of the people that he had in the gallery. It was Denisha Merriweather, who was a young girl, struggled in school, failed third grade twice, he talked about. Then she enrolled in a private center for education and for learning with the help of a tax credit scholarship program. Today, he went on to say, she is the first in her family to graduate, not just from high school, but from college. Yeah. Later this year, she'll get a master's degree in social work. Everybody was on their feet except members of the Democratic Party. They were struggling to, and this is a young African-American girl.
Right.
It was like they were conflicted as to whether to applaud for someone who succeeded, but succeeded through choice.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, that they want to keep government in control, not parents, not individuals, not families. School choice works because it empowers the institution that matters most, and that institution is the family, and it allows them to select the school that's going to be best for their son or daughter and meet their needs and allow them to achieve the, get on the path to achieving the American dream. And we saw that on display last night. It was a powerful moment, and the president, I think, just was great to point out. It happened because we have this thing called freedom, this thing called school choice.
And that just is amazing to me, that the cycle of poverty broken by having a choice of a good education. Mm-hmm. And, again, a young African-American girl who is successful and giving back. I mean, I know what it's – a social worker is one who gives back to their community. My wife is a social worker by training. So, I mean, it's not like she's, gaining and running. I mean, she is gaining and giving. But yet they couldn't celebrate that. And that's very telling about the focus and the priorities of the Democratic Party.
Yep. No, it's choice works, and they don't like it because they're beholden to the believe in like big government control, and we believe in empowering individuals and families. So it was like you, I think, like you said, Tony, it was a great moment, and it's something that the Trump administration looks like they're going to champion, which is good to hear.
One other high point, which I mean, it was a very moving moment when the president recognized the widow of the Navy SEAL, Ryan Owens.
Yeah, Karen Owens was amazing, wasn't she?
That really was. It was a touching moment.
It sure was. And then, her emotion, and you could tell, a woman of faith when she was pointing towards heaven, and the emotion that was there, just underscored what an amazing individual her husband had to be and the sacrifice he made for our great country. It was special. It was probably the moment of the night, and appropriately so for an amazing lady and her amazing husband.
And then the president, after a long, long standing ovation, the president then went on to say, quote, Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity. For as the Bible teaches us, there is no greater act of love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Ryan laid down his life for his friends, for his country, and for our freedom. We will never forget him. Touching moment.
It's powerful. It's powerful, and it was well said by the president. It that moment was like what makes this country so special. People like Ryan Owens, his wife, and the sacrifice they've given, and then to be recognized by the commander in chief in such an appropriate way is, again, it just, I think, underscores why this is the greatest country ever, and we thank the good Lord that we get to live here and raise our families here.
Yeah, but the president, I hope, as he connected it in his speech, understands that type of sacrifice is rooted in a deep, abiding faith, and that is why we must protect that faith in the exercise of that faith.
Yep, no, exactly right, Tom, exactly right.
Jim, as always, great to have you with us.
You bet.
Keep up the great work on Capitol Hill.
We'll do it. Thanks. Take care.
You can find out more about Jim Jordan and the House Freedom Caucus when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, an Ohio homeschooling mom was banned from Facebook, not once, but twice, and you won't believe why. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
What will Donald do during his first 100 days in office? Family Research Council has laid out a conservative playbook for the president-elect to follow in order to repair some of the damage done by the Obama administration's liberal elite special interests. In a timely panel discussion, policy experts lay out a game plan of actions that the Trump administration can take in its first 100 days. Visit frc.org/first100 to view this policy discussion.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Elizabeth Johnston, an Ohio homeschool mother of 10 who runs the popular conservative blog The Activist Mommy, says that Facebook recently suspended her account because she wrote about how the biblical book of Leviticus condemns homosexuality as detestable and an abomination. Elizabeth and her husband, Dr. Patrick Johnston, have a passion for strong families, restored marriages, Christian education, revival in the church, and a return to biblical thinking and practice. Elizabeth spoke with FRC President Tony Perkins on Wednesday.
Elizabeth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Hey, great to have you on. I know that you and your husband, who's a physician, you have a passion for strong families, restored marriages, Christian education, revival in the church, all those things that, you know, we focus on here. You simply were talking about these issues on your Facebook post. You quoted Leviticus in what it has to say about homosexuality, and all of a sudden something happened. What happened?
That's right. I was banned for 3 days. Facebook said that my comment concerning homosexuality violated its community standards. And after my three-day ban, I came right back on, and I told my followers, I have 75,000 followers, I told them what had happened, where I'd been for 3 days. And
kind of in a Facebook timeout, is that what it was?
Right, a Facebook jail. Yeah. And I reposted the screenshots of the scriptures and the commentary that I had been banned for. And Facebook, the post was going viral. And Facebook, very quickly, within just a few hours, banned me again for 7 days. And so I wrote a press release while I was on my 7-day ban. And it ended up being a worldwide story. And Facebook wasn't responding to the media who were requesting a response as to why quoting scripture and what it has to say about homosexuality was considered violating their community standards. But the day it ended up on Fox News and the New York Times, all of a sudden, we got an apology from Facebook.
Okay, they gave you an apology, but did they give you a reason? That you were, now you were suspended twice, 3 days the first time. Okay.
I believe they were dishonest. They said it was a mistake. They said it was an error. But the truth is people are being censored all over the world on Facebook because they are quoting what the Bible says about homosexuality.
But this would have been a mistake twice, right?
Exactly. How could it be a mistake? When they banned me, they sent me a very clear message. These screenshots, these comments you made violated our community guidelines. And it is consistent with what I see coming to me from all over the world. Now that this has become a story, people are sending me their stories. They're sending me their screenshots and video evidence that Facebook is censoring conservatives and Christians. It's not just on the homosexuality issue. It's on the issue of Islam. If you oppose Islam, it's on the even people that are just posting, you know, pro-Trump videos and posts. They are being censored as well. I have unbelievable evidence in a file.
But now, if you post fake news, they'll take that, right?
Probably. Well, they've censored us in the name of trying to crack down on fake news. But I'm afraid that may have been a ruse to do what they were really wanting to do, and that's basically anything that they consider bigoted. Call that fake news.
Well, I have news for him. It's the good news. It's not fake news.
Amen. Amen.
This was the first time? Is this the first time you've had an infraction like this in the eyes of Facebook where they've suspended your account?
Actually, about 6 or 7 months ago, I was placed on a 3-day ban as well. So I had experienced it once before. But this time I decided, you know what? Even though they've apologized and placed my material back on my site, I thought they haven't apologized to all the other conservatives and Christians out there who, many of them, have their pages completely deleted. Let's get to the bottom of this. Let's make sure that the world knows that when Mark Zuckerberg says Facebook is unbiased, that the world really knows the truth, that they are biased against an agenda that's not the leftist agenda.
Another question for you, Elizabeth. You've had some kind of liberal Christians that have criticized you for speaking out, saying you should just drop the issue.
Right. That's right. And I had that option. You know, I had to make a decision. Do I want to lie low and just thank God that I have my page back and not rustle any feathers? But again, you know, why is it that Facebook can discriminate against people in the private sector? Yes, it is the private sector. But,
right.
Tony, are we allowed to discriminate against people in the private sector based upon their religious or political viewpoint?
Well, according to the left, who demands tolerance, no. But, of course, it's a one-way street for them.
Right. I think that pointing out that double standard is important.
I'm
not going to lie down and just say, oh, thank you, and grovel at the feet of Facebook, who gave me an insincere apology.
Well, and I agree with you. And, Elizabeth, I thank you for bringing attention to this, because I do think that, hey, the playing field needs to be level. If they're going to, I know they're private, as you said, but if they're going to hold themselves up as a place of community conversation, every voice needs to be heard. So, Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you.
You can follow Elizabeth Johnston's blog over at ActivistMommyOfficial.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.